Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to get started now. This is the local government workshop constitutional review. My name is Byron Millat, chairman of the workshop. I'd like to introduce to you the panel members of the workshop that are up here with me. Sitting next to me is Jim Newman, delegate to the last convention, the government committee of that body, who will serve as the representative of the constitutional convention at this workshop. Next to Mr. Dugan is Evan Hobson, the mayor of the North Slope Borough. Evan is a former member, was a member of the last session of the Territorial House of Representatives, and served for many years thereafter in the State Senate. Sitting next to Mr. Hobson is Ben Marsh, who served as city manager of the city of Anchorage from 1967-68, served as a city councilman of that city in 1969, and since that time has served on the Anchorage borough and now municipal assembly. Next to Ben is Lee Sharp, a former member of the Juneau Borough Assembly and now the municipal attorney for the city and borough of Juneau. At the end of the table is Mike Harper, who recently has been the executive director of the Rural Alaska Community Action Program and presently the deputy in the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. The purpose of the workshop, and I understand that there are a number of students at the university who are here as part of a credit course on the constitutional review. We welcome you. We welcome any delegates who may be in the audience, of course, getting present. We're here to discuss the local government articles and state constitution. The way we structure them is rather formal. Mr. Dugan to explain the background and the work that the members of that constitutional convention did, the development of the local government article. Of course, the other persons in the panel with a vast amount of local government experience, because it's surmised certainly from the biographical data that I gave you about them, will comment on their perspectives as to how that article has worked and might be modified subsequent to the passage of the last constitution. The chairman, I take the easy way out, that my only obligation to introduce our gentlemen if I can carry on. As the state First Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs, though, I would like to comment just briefly on the local government article. It seems also, as Senator Hensley said yesterday afternoon, there has been a generational change since the leadership that existed prior to the constitutional conference transpired. Although I've got no perspective on what happened at the time, it seems from my experience and from what I've heard and used with respect to what was on the article, that it certainly was the article that was the most innovative with respect to forging new ground in the development of the state constitution. And I suspect that that's the reason that it seems also to be the article which was received by, if not the last public, at least those involved in local government in Alaska, with the greatest amount of skepticism. And it was not until, and this is the first one of the until within the last half a decade, that considerable use and response to the basic philosophies of that particular article began to be accepted and to be applied vigorously with respect to local government development in our state. So that brief commentary, Jim. So you will.
getting me to talk about local government is just about continually winding a phonograph and never letting it run down. Once I get started, I never know when to quit. I can tell you that it was an experience being a member of the local government committee that I probably couldn't have fought for at that time the education that I got for $20,000, which was a minimum. I'm particularly happy with the results of the local government committee's work, and I feel that today the article still stands as open, which means nothing that I can see in the way of changes other than something that somebody might think of that would strengthen it a little further than what it is. When the committee started out on the local government article, of course, they were kind of a loose end because nobody knew what the other person was talking about. Nobody knew what they weren't sure what they really wanted to end up with. They knew that from the experience of the county local government of the lower 48 at that time, that the overlapping of governmental units, the counties, the cities, the state government, the expanding the growth of some of the cities to include the same boundaries or greater boundaries than what some of the counties were, the pyramiding of local government function, two shares, two assessors, two everything else, compounded a good many problems and cost a great deal of money. The other thing was that, particularly in Alaska, one of the major agencies throughout the Bend territory, the school interest, had entrenched the school boards to the point that they were almost a law unto themselves and were causing a great deal of hardship to the other communities, to the communities where they were located. With that in mind, the local government committee started to develop what they thought would be a workable solution. They wanted to eliminate the one layer of government, either eliminate the counties as such, or in time, eliminate cities as such. And they came up with the concept of the borough that would be a local government area that would cover enough area where everybody's needs would be the same, the boundaries would be such that the economic and the social needs of it all possible would all be the same within a borough. And they foresaw that the state in time would be covered with boroughs. Unfortunately, those things didn't happen as they wanted, because it seemed that the legislature either failed or refused to face up to the problem of local governments. And finally, one member of the legislature was able to enforce a mandatory borough act upon the state, and boroughs did get started at that time. I believe that the preamble of the local government article explains pretty much what's intended. The purpose of this article is to provide for maximum local self-government with a minimum of local government unit, to prevent the duplication of taxing entities, and of course local construction would be given to whatever is said. Early days of the territory, the school board had taxing authority, the cities had taxing authority, and of course the state had taxing authority, and they were beginning to get into conflict about who taxes the money that should be collected for it, and how much should be collected. So the local government committee started them with that in mind, and they worked out the concept then that local government would, the borough would be the predominant local government entity underneath the state. Any other powers that were to be given to any other entity would come either from the state or from the borough government, that there would be no further duplication of tax assessing or tax collecting agencies in order to solve the problem of realistically assessing and collecting taxes to meet the needs of the school district, to meet the needs of all those other areas within the state that need to go to be done. They set up two types of boroughs. One was the organized, which was the type that you have entries in the general district. The unorganized borough was to be the rest of the state and would remain as the unorganized borough, with the governing body of the territorial being the state legislature, until such time as these areas would be able to band together and set themselves up into a local government area, such as the North Slope Borough has done. Evan is now the mayor. It's unfortunate, as far as I'm concerned, and these are personal remarks, that the legislature has not addressed itself, did not address itself to the problem of boroughs right after the, shortly after state was performed, and it's further unfortunate that the legislature has not as yet really addressed itself to the problem of the unorganized borough, which is a vast area of the state to this day. I think it's short-sighted on their part, but I think also that it's probably some area of either fear or they don't feel that they know enough about it to do anything with it. It's tough on the bush area of the state, so to speak, that they don't have the benefit of more, a little more government than what they have in the neighborhood. Share themselves with the benefits of the military as well as the damage share. The
okay, we'll see.
Okay, in addressing itself to setting up rules, both organized and unorganized, the local government as the local government committee searched for quite a time for some method to handle the problem of the urban against suburban areas of the state, the city being urban, having all of the facilities that the people needed, and the urban and the suburban areas, of course, not having any, and how did you make provision for the suburban areas to achieve the services that they wanted, either on a limited basis or on a full-scale basis. And they developed the idea that service areas would be the answer. If an area of the borough wanted to put in a sewer district or a water district or a sewer district or something like that, that they wanted in their area, they would petition the borough assembly, and they would decide in favor of work, and they could have that, and they could have any of those specific services on their own. The rest of the people in the borough would not be saddled with the cost of those services, unless those services developed to be area-wide services, such as schools. In providing for the formation of boroughs and the also the dissolution, if such should become necessary, the Constitution set up a local boundary commission to review a petition for a borough to review the boundary to determine the petition was valid and it was good, and they had the power of that if they want to do, they could either enlarge or shrink the bar, the boundaries of the proposed borough, and they could, rather than one of those adopted by, they would find it adopted by the people that would be the bounds of their boundary. They also, the boundary commission also provided where they, whether it would be a contact jurisdiction, this is over whose boundary should go where between two boroughs, where they would settle that also. The other, only other agency set up was the local government agency, I guess is what you call it, but it was an agency set up within the, to be set up within the state government to advise, assist, and provide information, even to do some of the legwork for communities, cities, boroughs, even some of the service areas that's necessary to assist them in obtaining some of the services that they felt that they would like to have in their in their particular area. All of these, of course, the taxing powers and the collection powers for these services remain with the borough assembly and should never be given away by the borough assembly or by the state government to anybody else. In providing for boroughs, organized boroughs, they provided for home rule boroughs, which would be a borough that would have all of the power that was not denied to it by state law or by the Constitution. But there's an interesting thing there, is to notice the phraseology of that, is that they had all the power, not that was given to them, but all the power that was not denied to them by state law or by the Constitution, unfortunately, by the federal Constitution. This meant then that under a home rule provision, a borough was virtually autonomous unless the state legislature would pass legislation that would restrict their activities in any particular area that they chose to get into. final comment, I feel very strongly that the legislature sooner or later is going to have to address itself to the problem of the unorganized borough. They have attempted to address themselves to the problem of schools in the unorganized borough, and I don't feel that they still have quite the right answer, but this is a personal opinion, and it is not to be construed as having anything to do with the Constitution. But I don't think that they have really arrived at the solution, and I don't think that they're going to arrive at the solution of the urban, unurban, suburban areas of the unorganized borough or portions of the state until they decide that they are either going to sit down as a legislature and take some time to work at the problem, or they appoint a some sort of a body to do for them what they should do for themselves. In other words, hold hearings, get around among the various parts of the unorganized borough and the state, find out what the people want, what they need, and then report back to the legislature with a series of draft ordinances for the legislature to act upon at that time. I don't know that there's much more need to be said about the beginning of that, and I'm sure there's a question that you
Thank you, Jim. If at the end of each presentation, anyone has a question or comment that they'd like to make, I'd like to ask you to come forward to the mic in order to get all of the conversation recorded. As we move forward, if I don't see any hands raised, let's move on to the next speaker. Thank you, Jim. I'd like to ask the Anchor Assemblyman Ben Mark.
Thank you, Byron. I came to Alaska in 1966 as a city manager, but previous to that, I had been a city manager in other cities in the United States for about 16 years. In other words, I guess most of my, all of my career has been involved in one way or another with local government. During the early 60s, the story was circulating in local government circles, in the professional societies and so forth, that Alaska had a refreshing and exciting new idea for, in the field of local government, the creation of a new unit called a borough, which was going to eliminate duplication of services, fragmentation of government on a geographical and functional basis, and was going to solve most of the ills that plague local governments throughout the United States. You know, it's really rather astonishing when you take a look at local government patterns, especially in the highly urbanized counties such as the Chicago and New York areas, where you have literally hundreds of autonomous municipalities, all in competition with one another, and all dividing functions, and all shunting off various onerous responsibilities to their neighbors. It makes you wonder how society can, the society of man can organize itself so badly. How they can manage to screw everything up so badly. And I came to Alaska with a feeling of excitement and interest in participating in this new type of government. I haven't lost that because I do think that Alaska has the most forward-looking and innovative local government structures of any place in the United States. The Mandatory Borough Act that Jim spoke of, dating from 1964, required that urbanized areas form themselves into boroughs, but they gave them a choice. First-class boroughs, which would have the type of home rule government, non-limited government that Jim speaks of, and a second-class borough, which was to be and is a limited or much weaker type of government, one in which functions are not permitted to be exercised, and power is not allowed to be exercised unless they are specifically authorized by referendum or by the legislature. And that is the kind of borough that the people in the Anchorage area chose to adopt. That left them with a weak borough regional government and a strong home rule, unlimited type of city government. Now the, it seems in looking back on it, well, first of all, let me touch upon one of the mechanisms that was provided for in the Constitutional Convention for to bring about coordination and working relationship between cities and boroughs occupying, if you will, the same territory. And that was the interlocking membership of city councils and borough assemblies. Borough assemblies were made up of persons to be elected on a district basis or whatever other basis was chosen for the areas outside of cities, and for cities to be represented on the assembly by members of their city councils. And that provided an interlocking membership in which I was privileged to participate. I figured, I felt that it worked quite well. That is, to the extent that it did work. And that is that city councilmen were chosen. I was selected in 1970 and did serve on the borough assembly and the city council both. Then from 1970 to 1975 when the system was changed. The system was changed because in 1973, there was a Superior Court decision in Fairbanks, which held that that what they call institutional representation, being representation by a selected city council member on the assembly, was not true representation, that it was representation once removed, I guess you'd call it. And furthermore, in Fairbanks, there was a conflict with the one man, one rule, one vote doctrine. In Anchorage, we continued to have the interlocking membership for another year because it so happened that we were apportioned properly. that the population of the city and the number of persons on the assembly worked out so that the apportionment was okay. One of the things that happened as a result of this organization of cities and boroughs is that a power struggle was made inevitable by the formation of these governments. Because unlike anywhere else in the United States, when an area-wide power is exercised by a borough in Alaska, it is simultaneously denied the municipalities within that borough, the cities within that borough. Consequently, if you have the planning power, for example, exercised by the regional government, which is very logical, then the city within that borough, in this case, say being Anchorage, no longer has the power. They can't have a planning department. They can't do any planning. It's done by the one government that has that jurisdiction, and that's fine. That goes along into the point where you begin to urbanize the areas outside the city, and say those areas start to need fire and police protection, and then the borough prays to adopt those powers. And when they do so, then the city no longer has those powers. And when you get to the basic local government powers being transferred to the other government, then the mechanism is there to do away with the original city. And there you have a strong home rule city that's 50 years old and a borough that's 9 years old and with limited powers, and the borough is progressively chiseling away at the city's powers, and it sets up a power struggle that I don't know if the legislature anticipated, but it was there, and it created a tension situation that had to be solved. The mechanism for a solution turned out to be unification, and we've had three successful unifications in Alaska now among the nine boroughs that are here. I would anticipate that as the areas outside of cities become more urbanized, the pressure for unification will create that fact in other boroughs as well. And I think that probably the next one to experience it will probably be Fairbanks, because we're already seeing a creation of pretty serious tensions between North Star Borough and the city of Fairbanks here. There was a mechanism anticipated by the Constitutional Convention, by the Constitution, which would propose that service areas should not be created in boroughs surrounding cities if they were contiguous to those cities and the city was competent and able to extend those services. The Constitution provided and provides that under those circumstances, the annexation should be the mechanism by which those services are extended. However, that turned out not to be too successful because the power struggles again prevented annexation from ever being a successful method of having the city boundaries follow the urbanizing the urbanizing mass of the population. Without annexation as a successful method of extending city boundaries, then that just about left the only possible way to go to be unification. The Local Boundary Commission, I think, was intended to be a device, an agency by which boundaries could be mandated from the state level. Local Boundary Commission never functioned that way. The only way they ever functioned was when they were called in by the local agencies to arbitrate boundary disputes. The one and only time that they seem to have made a decision which seemed to fall within the mandate from the original Constitutional Convention was when they decided that the Eagle River the Eagle River Borough did not meet the qualifications, and they disallowed it. I was somewhat surprised that they did that, but as far as I know, that's the only time the Boundary Commission has ever actually functioned as a state agency for determination of boundaries. I've now been able to serve on an assembly in a unified municipality for a year, first year, and I think that unification is probably the most successful governmental institution that I have seen yet. It combines all of the advantages and in my opinion, none of the disadvantages. It provides a single taxing authority. It does away with fragmentation. It does away with division of government on functional lines, and it is a strictly accountable local government agency. I mean, it's readily accountable to the electorate. I think that we've had a lot of growing pains, and we'll have a lot more than trying to consolidate two bureaucracies, for example. It's a humongous task. You can't believe how complicated it can get. But that's a problem which has got to yield to time, and soon we won't be able to recall all the difficulties that we have. And already we note that when issues come before the assembly, that we no longer consider those issues on the basis of whether they're pro-city or pro-borough. Those lines have disappeared. I think that unification is the local government structure of the future, and I would commend it to all of you students as the means by which we can overcome the rural-urban dispute, the urban growth problem, the duplication of governmental powers problem, and all of the other attendant things which we seem not to have been able to solve in the rest of the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Any questions or comments? There's a lot I'd like to ask you. My question is,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank Vic Fisher for the opportunity today to respond to his direct request that I devote my energies and remarks to the so-called unorganized borough. And that I will do today. More in response to the request for information about local government, regional government, and boroughs in particular, than a direct proposal of our agency. Again, in the spirit of Governor Hammond, that is going to the people to see what they would like to see. That is what I'd like to see happen this afternoon. I present one model that my agency or the Department of Community and Regional Affairs has developed to date. As most of you know, today the unorganized borough represents a question mark in the scheme of development of regional government in Alaska. Many people who have chosen to live out there have done so to get away from government and boundaries and rules dictating how they are to handle their own affairs. Traditionally, there has been a degree of freedom and a feeling of control over events in rural Alaska. It is to protect this ideal and to maintain this feeling of autonomy in the face of growing forces seeking to control the bush that consideration is being given to the establishment of regional government in what is now known as the unorganized borough. Our department has received requests from Vista Bay, from Middle Yukon, and from the Upper Yukon, also from Southeast Alaska for borough organizational information. Additionally, there has been concern and a desire by residents to explore alternatives to the current system of local government, which pulls heavily on the human resources of small communities in order to maintain their city function. People who live in rural Alaska end up being spread thinly. They are asked to serve on state boards and commissions, developing services, and yet many of these same residents are called on to use their energy to keep their own cities running smoothly. In response to this need for responsive government, the department is considering the establishment of unorganized boroughs, I put that in quotes, which would increase the quality of involvement residents have in local decisions concerning planning and delivery of governmental services to people within a given region. Tentative boundaries have been suggested with respect to existing ANCSA, or the Regional Native Corporation, and Education Service Area boundaries. Our department is considering legislation which will formally designate areas of the unorganized borough as separate, distinct regions. These regions, which we call unorganized boroughs, will not simply be administrative districts where there is no change in the existing relationship between residents and the state, but rather each unorganized borough would have a locally elected assembly governing that particular region. Under this approach, the assembly would act on all issues pertaining to education and regional planning. Additionally, public safety and health powers have been suggested as optional powers for these unorganized boroughs. The boundaries of each unorganized borough are coterminous with those of existing Native regional corporations and REAAs, regional education tenant areas. Perhaps we should allude to a little bit more. Some of you that have been out of state might not have realized, but last year, 1975, the legislature passed an act that basically dissolved or did away with the old SOS system, the state-operated school system, in favor of something called the regional education tenancy. Today, it just went into effect this fall, and today I've heard nothing but warm words and success. Where necessary, the REAAs have been used as building blocks to form a region which fully meets the constitutional mandate that boroughs present a socially, culturally, and economically integrated area. Extending this sensitivity to rational planning for fundamental services in unorganized boroughs, within each of the areas, a formal relationship between the REAA's advisory school board and the unorganized boroughs plan. Because we are considering regions diverse in composition and history, each unorganized borough will have flexibility in determining the form this developing relationship will take. It is possible, for example, that regional school boards could, by local initiative, be combined with the unorganized rural assembly. Education in Alaska is paid for primarily by a combination of school foundation formula money and an amount of local contribution. In organized boroughs and cities, the basic local contribution is paid through the area assembly to the school district. The unorganized borough has no taxing authority, therefore an amount equal to the local contribution for these areas comes from the state general fund and is paid by the Department of Education directly to the REAA. One alternative suggested is to have the assembly for the unorganized borough receive these funds and allocate them upon approval of the regional school budget and plan. A second alternative suggested is to have the funds channeled through the assembly, but with the assembly having the power to comment but not disapprove funds unless the borough would have become organized. In the planning area, establishment of unorganized borough governments will impact upon planning for the unorganized borough on two fronts. First, the unorganized boroughs will become the fundamental regional units of governmental decision making. In that vein, planning, platting, and development of a comprehensive plan would be within the mandated planning function of the unorganized boroughs. State departments would be required to acknowledge and react to the unorganized boroughs in their own program plan. Development of resources and services would be done in consideration of the plans and zoning regulations made by each unorganized borough. Unorganized boroughs would, however, be required to consider the plans made by first class and home rule cities and recommendations from other communities within their region. Second, various state departments act in a review capacity to read and evaluate proposals for federal funding of programs and capital improvement projects for the entire state. A natural extension of the planning role for the regional assembly is to become involved in the A95 review process for programs and building plans slated for their area. This integral part of the planning function would keep the assembly for each unorganized borough abreast of proposed developments in their area and provide for the coordination of comprehensive plans for their region, making wise use of available resources. Requests for state and federal funds by local communities, nonprofit corporations, and other bodies would be channeled through the unorganized borough assembly for review and comment prior to review by state departments. And optional powers. In addition to the suggested initial powers of education and planning, we would recommend that unorganized boroughs be permitted to acquire the powers of public safety and health. Two areas of vital importance to rural Alaska, but only on an optional basis. If adopted by an unorganized borough, public safety powers would include police and emergency medical service as well as fire protection. Presently, many second-class cities and virtually all first-class and home rule cities in the unorganized borough exercise the police power. Typically, the service reflects the sophistication of the community government. Normally, the state troopers respond to a major crime. If public safety powers were assumed on a regional basis, village police officers would be supplemented with regional police officers. Establishing a regional police force could have several significant advantages for the residents. First, it would relieve a portion of the excessive burden placed on the state troopers, thereby making them more available to respond to serious crimes. Second, it would make a well-trained police officer available to the village, whether they be incorporated or not, to protect a particular community's interest. State troopers would continue to respond to and assist in the investigation of serious crimes. And in the health area, as a result of Public Law 93-641, federal legislation passed in 1974, the review and planning of comprehensive health care has been delegated to three health service area boards in Alaska. Therefore, it is vital that health planning in unorganized boroughs be an effort coordinated between local representatives, which would be the unorganized borough assembly, and health service area boards. In furtherance of this concern, CRA is working to sensitize the health leadership to the structure boundaries of the proposed unorganized boroughs. To reflect a formal relationship with the health board, the regional government could petition to serve as a sub-area advisory body or have several of its members on that sub-area advisory board. Contracting for delivery of health services could be done by a regional government. And as far as first-class and homeless cities go, since regional governments have been established to consolidate regional power and enhance the capacity of a particular area to plan for itself, it follows that the regions would logically defer to communities already organized on a first-class or home rule basis who choose to continue at this level of organization. Authority for planning, education, zoning, and other powers will remain unchanged in home rule and first-class cities. However, each unorganized borough will include these communities when responding in its capacity as regional representatives. Unorganized borough governments are proposed in this model, and again, this is simply a model, and I know I'll get your suggestions and criticism, and that's what I'm looking for today. But unorganized borough governments are proposed in this model which differ from organized boroughs in three distinct ways. First, they would not have power to tax. They would not be required to have three separate bodies for the borough assembly, for the planning commission, for school board. And they would not have the ability to acquire additional area-wide powers other than the health and public safety. And of course, they would have the mandated powers of planning and education. Accordingly, the potential powers of unorganized boroughs would be more limited than organized boroughs. Then, of course, how to pay for this? Again, I need your suggestions and your comments, but it is a fact that people participate in a government that requires a contribution on their part. It is in that spirit, the spirit of participation, that legislation providing for unorganized boroughs will be structured so as to require local involvement in both leadership and finances. Since no taxing powers would be granted the state could establish one of several taxes to finance these new regional governments. Alternatives include traditional means such as sales and property tax. Also, two other forms of taxation include an income tax on wages earned in the unorganized boroughs and a tax on developed natural resources. While considerable research has been done on the concept of unorganized boroughs, the proposal as I have presented it is in no way either final or complete. And again, in keeping with Governor Hammond's Government for the People policy, I would ask you to share your thoughts and questions on the proposed formation of regional government. Thank you, Brian.
Mike, could I ask you to comment further on what the portion of the local government article has to say about the creation of the local government agency, which has evolved, of course, into the Department of CRA. And I can recall there being John Biba, for example, made several references. statement that he's made during the course of his meeting to the effect that he felt that the Alaska local government agency has not been as responsive to local government needs, especially in rural Alaska, that it might have been over the years. And coupling that with the role of the local boundary commission, one of Alaska's perennial gadflies, Ted Boyko, has advocated many times, for example, at a constitutional convention to call for no other reason than to abolish the local boundary commission. I'm wondering if your experience in state government, being number two in the Department of Community Legal Affairs, is their comment.
I think the gentleman probably has a pretty fair observation there. Frankly, I think the department, and before that, local affairs agency for sure, the department I think was created in 73, and they had at least 10 years before that to do something. I think there could have been more initiative on the executive branch's part. However, I think after Senator Rader's Mandatory Borough Act created so many hard feelings in the early 60s, the legislature and the executive branch were particularly concerned not to create that bad feelings, hard feelings again in the state. I think that frankly prevailed throughout those years, and it is very difficult politically, I think, pragmatically, to take it on and to be perhaps as active as maybe the founding fathers or at least the gentlemen would like. The proposal I just talked about today, I think, is about a controversial a start that I've seen the department take, at least in the 2 years I've been there. Byron, I know the only other thing I've seen, probably the effort that Representative Tom Fink had for several years that he was down there, and that is simply to mandate boroughs and unorganized bush areas. And of course, that never even got out of committee, I don't believe. But I think the man has a good observation in there. I can't really defend it at all. On the other hand, there is a feeling in the state, too, and I think especially of this governor, that the government has been too long doing unto people rather than having an interplay and exchange with the people out there. And I think Mr. Hammond is reluctant to jam anything upon citizens of the state that they don't particularly want to have jammed on them. And with that kind of leadership, it's very difficult for an agency, and this agency, to go out and say, by God, this is what we want to do. So,
that question is certainly one that I could have asked of myself, I suppose, but I'd like to come to the point if I could. I can recall going to work for the local affairs agency in 1965. Jim Odell sitting in the back here, who's been deputy director of that agency and subsequently was director. And this is some years after state the local affairs agency, the only state agency mandated by the state constitution, having a staff of, I think, Jim, about five people and a budget of less than $200,000. And subsequently, coming down to Juneau myself in 1971 as director of local affairs, inheriting, the super agency, the $265,000 budget, and I think 8%. So.